You can shop from anywhere doing pretty much anything. You might shop while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast. And however you shop, we all know and love the thrill of the hunt. But do you also know how to get the thrill of the best deals? Because Rakuten shoppers do. With Rakuten, they get the deals they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Sephora, Nike, and even Expedia if you're looking to get some travel in. And getting cash back doesn't mean you have to miss out on sales because those can just be stacked right on top. It's easy to use and based on a simple idea. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back through PayPal or check. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Sweet, the Lady's Guide to Bro Culture. My name is Gina Bloom, and this is the podcast where I, a transgender stand-up comic, currently quarantined in sunny Van Nuys, California, bring on some of my favorite funny ladies from all over the country to talk about their very first experiences with bro popular culture. This is movies for dudes, TV shows for dudes, anything for dudes typically. Although we're all locked in, so it's basically movies and TV shows at this point. We're not going to go outside anytime soon. And today, this is the season two finale. I know that listeners at the start of the season heard that I had great plans for this season, none of which have come to pass because life just threw us all a big curveball. But that's okay. We're doing the best we can. And actually, I'm really excited because today, on our season finale, we have a very special treat, starting with the topic of our episode, and that is Adult Swim's Rick and Morty. Yes, Rick and Morty, the very famous adult cartoon on Adult Swim, has run for the past four seasons. It is created by Justin Roiland and Dan Harmon, and the voices of the two titular characters are also done by Justin Roiland. And it's a phenomenon. It's one of the highest rated shows on cable. It has won the Primetime Emmy for Best Animated Series, which we'll be talking about the episode that got its Emmy award. And it's huge. And it's huge on the internet. It has a very active and vocal fan base that we're going to be talking about. They're very concerned about Szechuan sauce and things like that. So we have a lot to talk about. We're going to try to cram it all into an hour. And I do want to welcome my first guest. She has never, ever, ever experienced Rick and Morty ever before. And she was adventurous enough to join us for this show and watch four episodes. Please say hello to my good friend, the lovely Nicole Blaine.
Hello. Hello.
Hi. How are you?
I am so excited to talk about this because I had no idea what I was about to see. So this is like, this blew my mind. I can't wait to jump in. So it was an honor to do the research to do this podcast.
I am so excited. I think you're the ideal guest because, you know, as a mom, as someone mm-hmm. whose purview into the world of Rick
an
and
old
Morty
lady.
Is very limited.
Yeah.
I don't think you'd have an opportunity to watch this show otherwise if it weren't for me. So you're quite welcome.
If it wasn't for you, I never would have watched it. So there you go.
And our second guest, I am equally excited to bring her on. She is a writer for Rick and Morty. Yes, a writer for the show. She penned the season four finale, which I enjoyed greatly. Please say hello to the lovely Anne Lane.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Thank you. Oh my God.
What a treat.
We got you on the show. This has been a long-term project of mine.
Truly, yeah. On my end too, I've sent a lot of emails just to make sure, like, oh, I'm gonna, yeah, it's great. I'm just gonna go talk about the show. It's cool. I'm not gonna give away plot as though that actually happens. So
we are not a spoiler show. We're not even going to talk about season four at all, because that would be weird to make you defend your own episode. That would be rather rude
It'd be
of me.
Fair. No, I'd be, I'm open.
No, I'm sure you would be, but that I would be like, that's asking a bit much. But I saw it when it was out, and it was a lot of fun. So thank you for bringing that to the world.
Thanks, I appreciate
it. All right, Nicole Blaine, you've never seen Rick and Morty. You saw four episodes, and those four episodes are the season one episode entitled, gosh, what is that thing entitled?
Rick Potion number 9.
Rick Potion six. Number 9, yes, the Cronenberg episode. You saw from season two, Interdimensional Cable number 2. And then from season 3, we checked out the season one, the Rick Shank Redemption, and the Emmy winning episode Pickle Rick. Those are the episodes we checked out.
That's what won the Emmy.
That's the one that won the Emmy. So, and they form a little short film, I think. Like, you can actually, if you watch them all in sequence, you can actually get a pretty good idea what the narrative of the show to that point had been. So, Nicole, let us know. What'd you think?
All right. Well, here's the thing. I'm someone who makes a lot of decisions before I do them. Like, I like to look at people and decide I hate them or I want to make out with them. Like, it's instant. I am 100% black and white. When I saw Mystic River with Sean Penn, and it was like 4 hours long, I wanted to kill myself through every single minute of it. And it was when I kept looking around going, how are people watching this? So I either love things or I hate things. And I will tell you that I already decided how I felt about the show before I saw the show. And I, as a 43-year-old mother, okay, who only loves serial dark comedy dramas and is a stand-up comedian, so makes me extra hateful and spiteful, I was so excited to shit all over the show and be like, I hate it. It's the dumbest thing ever. This is why I'm so glad I haven't wasted any minutes of my life watching this. And I sat down and I turned it on and I was like, fuck me, it's genius. I cannot believe I've been missing the party that no one invited me to. It blew my mind. I can't even believe how good it is. I'm ashamed to say that I missed it to the party.
I think that if a party is surrounded by very loud, obnoxious people doing really loud, obnoxious, and considerate things in the name of the party, then that's really, you're like, I don't know if I need to get into the mix. Yeah. So I get that.
And I get that I'm not cool enough to be invited. So I love that I found the most uncool pathway into this, where I was like, who's never seen this? And like, probably everyone was like, no, we've all seen this. I'm the only one Gina could find that hasn't seen Rick and Morty. So, but here's what was fun about it.
I'm so excited for your thoughts. Yeah.
I know. Here's the thing. The first episode, so Rick Potion number 9, which is ultimately about a virus that is contagious.
Oh yeah, that was such a mind fuck at this time.
Yeah.
It was so on point. Now, of course, like, here's the other thing, as I'm watching this, I'm going, as soon as it opens and I've never seen any of these characters before, I was like, oh, this guy is like, you know, the crazy doc scientist from Back to the Future. Okay. And then the kid walks in, his grandson, Morty, right? Yeah. And I'm like, oh, he's wearing a suit and tie. That's totally just like Alfie Keaton, Michael J. Fox in Back to the Future in every role we know. And I was like, oh, I wonder if that's how they pitched it. Yes, I was correct. Like, within 5 seconds, right? Is that that's how it was pitched, probably?
I think it had they put out a short and then it was picked up. Yeah.
Yes, that's true. That's how it was picked up originally from like channel 101.
Doc and Marty and Rick and Morty. So it's like it's a direct.
Right.
Absolutely.
Right. So my husband walks in within like 10 minutes. He's like, so what do you think? And I was like, I don't know if this is crazy, but like, I think it's like a Back to the Future setup with the dynamic of these two. And he was like, Nicole, it's called Rick and Morty. Like, yeah, Doc and Marty. Where? What? I mean, I, it took you 10 minutes to figure that out.
I'm so sorry. I jumped in.
No, but the best part was that, like, that's how much of a virgin I am to this show. I was like, no.
And I'm so much of a mansplainer that I was like, hold on, pause your story. Let me tell you the punchline.
I love that. Yes. But then my favorite thing about the family dynamic in this first episode of, well, my first episode, this one.
Yes.
Was seeing that the husband and wife, the parents, hate each other. And the way that they talk to each other. And I don't know if it was in that episode or another episode where it was one of those things where they're like, look, either fix, you know, get a divorce or go to counseling, right?
Yep, that was that episode,
What a creative way for me to immediately understand everyone's role in this family. The characters are so clear and so well-defined and sadly incredibly relatable, right? Like, that whose parents aren't either, especially in quarantine, yes. Right? You are either in a divorce or you're about to get divorced. Like, no one,
right.
No one is not.
Oh, that's yeah. It's delightful how flawed everyone is. Like I'm always digging into that kind of stuff is my favorite part of the show is just being like, yeah, but like, what's the gritty reality of living with someone you might pity? Uh-oh.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, I have a confession too. I actually had never seen Rick and Morty until about 6 weeks into quarantine myself. For the same reason that Anne, for the same reason that you mentioned, like that, like the volume, not just the fanboys on like Twitter and things like that, but just the fact that I'm kind of naturally rebellious and like so many of my comedy friends were like into it. I'm like, it cannot be as good as you say. No, I refuse. I refuse to think that this Adult Swim show is so smart. And like, and I got so into it. I was like, oh my God, no. And I'm reading like Reddit posts and I'm getting like, just turning into a total freaking neckbeard about it. And like, it just does that to you.
Yeah.
I don't know how you guys as writers, see, and this is why I also feel like I fell in love with it immediately, because my comedy, my stand-up is very much like, it's chronological, if it were to be, you know, I'm a narrator. Like, I really tell stories from beginning, middle, and end. I would never think of the absurdity that goes on with the show, which is what I love most about, if I have to say what I like about comedy, it's something I can't do. Which is right for something so absurd. Like, how in a writer's room would you even break down something that goes into, because you guys have every universe that you can go to and then make up universes. And also you jump through time very interestingly in the story. Like, all of a sudden I realized the characters were like, referring to like, so that happened and now it's over. And then this other problem happened. It's already solved and here's that.
Right.
Like, it's interesting. Like, the pacing of it actually kind of jumps fast to like get through some of the like science things, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
How do you guys think of this shit?
I think everyone has a different, there's like, I joined at season four and then have been writing season five and season six. And the way that I think there's no way to write it. There's just approaching the problem of we can do anything. Rick can do anything. But why? Yeah. But why? Uh-huh. And then I think that's where some of the absurdity comes, is that like under that gaze, you're going, I mean, a story about like, I don't know, having a bake sale at school that would happen in most sitcoms that are about dysfunctional families that you're like, oh, I can see the whole family relating to this and dealing with this and oh, everyone's got their thing. And you can imagine that, except it's about Rick and Morty. It's not about the Smith family. It's about the fact that there's this man who could do anything, and yet he's living in his daughter's house, working out of her basement, avoiding growth and change.
Yeah.
And that's his show. And it's fun, and it's funny, and it's dumb. But then the dark parts, I think, come from the emotional reality of he's living with people. They love him. He loves them. He's a human. It sucks.
Yeah. Well, the love-hate relationship that they all, the characters have for each other, because they all have, I can tell, they all have, like, the brother-sister dynamic is love-hate. The mother love-hates everybody, right? Yeah. Like, and herself. I mean, it's so deep. And that's the thing, is that we are all those people. Like, I can't believe how rich these relationships are in within seconds. And I don't know if it's because it's an archetype in the way that all writing can be so beautifully archetypal, or like you said, when you were like, well, so what's the why, right? Like, what are these crazy people's motivations? And it ended up being so relatable. I mean, it's brilliant. I literally feel like my mind was blown.
Oh, that was
Yeah, look at that. Like, look at that. And we have like a lifelong fan that we made.
This is going to get weird. I mean, how did you even get hired for this show? Like, who?
I know. I was a big fan of the show before I got hired. Sure. I even described plot point for plot point the episode of Pickle Rick to a boyfriend at the time that ended up didn't go great. But I was like so into it. He's like, yeah, it sounds like remedial emotional classes for man boys. And I was like, I mean, that's part of it. Okay, that, sure,
yeah, a
but
little
that's
bit,
like a sliver.
Sure.
Yeah, like and like, and she said all this stuff. And there's anyway, but so I wrote an animated spec or an animated original pilot, and I had sent it to a friend, and she is the incredible co-owner of the Dynasty Typewriter Theater in LA. She's Vanessa Raglan. She's one of the most delightful people in the world. Like, she's such a treat. Yeah.
Everybody says that about Vanessa.
Oh my gosh, she's the best. She's by far like the coolest, and she's got the coolest kids and husband and life. Like, I want to be her. And she, they were doing Harmontown at the theater, and they asked her if she knew of anyone who had samples that were like sort of Rick and Morty-y, and because I had been throwing my sample at her a bunch, being like, can I make this house? And she sent that, and then did an interview, and
nice.
Oh my god. I love all the women helping
yes.
in. Like, thank you so much. That is so beautiful. So how was that interview? I'm so like, how were you shaking? Like, what was that?
Oh yeah. It was so fun though. It was relieving. It was with Mike McMahon, who is show running season 4 and has since gone on to do Solar Opposites and Star Trek Lower Decks. And he's so talented and kind and great. And it's like, it felt like interviewing to go to like a summer camp. That was the best. And like everything I mentioned, I was like, oh, well, you know, my favorite, physicist is Richard Feynman, obviously. And he was like, oh yeah, Richard Feynman. And we were just like going off on like little tangents and then coming back, and I just like ended the interview just being like, hey, you know, however this goes, this is really nice. Like, cool to meet other nerds. And that's been the cool thing about working at Rick and Morty, is that everyone is very cool. Everyone's really nice, really like works hard, and it's been a dream.
Yeah, I gotta say that, you know, before I watched the show, it was intimidating to want to watch it, because it didn't seem friendly because of its reputation.
Yeah.
But then hearing you describe like the, you know, the interview and like the showrunner and the staff, it totally makes sense that it'd be a bunch of like Feynman nerds, because of course, like who else would think of this stuff? And like, I was watching it, like I said, just a few weeks into quarantine, and I got through the first few episodes. And this is fun. This is diverting. This is, you know, I'm in quarantine. I need something to pass the time. And then when I saw this episode from the first season, the Cronenberg episode, I was like, wow, okay. I've been wanting to see this happen forever. When I was a little kid, I wrote this story about time travelers, right? It was like a Back to the Future thing as well. These two time travelers, and they had somehow made themselves immortal. I don't remember exactly how I justified it, but they had a time machine, and they needed to get back to a certain date, and they fucked up and they overshot the date, so they went too far back in time and they broke their time machine. But because they were immortal, they literally had to wait around 300 years for the event to happen that they traveled back in time for. And then joke was when it came time to actually do the thing that they were supposed to do, they're waiting 300 years for, they overslept and missed it. So I was like, finally, someone has done this kind of humor.
Right.
And like, proved to my like 12-year-old self that I was right all along. And I think that's why I really like the show, because I identify with Rick and his desire to be right under all circumstances. No matter what.
Yeah, always taking the high road. Yeah, absolutely.
Yes. So that's what did it for me. I am gonna play the first clip from that episode. This is where Rick and Morty are sort of surveying the scene, all the damage that the two of them have done to the universe, right before they do the thing that like really impressed me. They you know, with the alternate universes, they did the thing that I'd always wanted to see, which was just to basically say, fuck it, we fucked up this universe beyond repair, and we're gonna leave. That's it. Like that's the solution they came up with. And like that, I thought that was so damn clever. So thank you guys for validating my personal experience. So, we're gonna watch that scene, and I'm gonna share it on the Zoom coming right up.
Boy, Morty, I really Cronenberged the world up, didn't I? You got a whole planet of Cronenbergs walking around down there, Morty. At least they're not in love with you anymore, though. It's a huge step in the right direction.
Oh my God, it's a living nightmare! How could you be so irresponsible, Rick?
Me irresponsible? All I wanted you to do was hand me a screwdriver, Morty. You're the one who wanted me to buckle down and make you up a roofie juice serum so you could roofie that poor girl at your school. I mean, are you kidding me, Morty? You're gonna try to take the high road on this one? You're a little creep, Morty. You're just a little creepy creep person.
All right, fine. I should have just listened to you when you refused to make the serum. I'm willing to accept my part of the blame for this, Rick, but I'll tell you something. You know what? You gotta accept your part of the blame. I'm not the one who fouled up the serum. I'm not the one who haphazardly, you know, mixed a bunch of nonsense together and created a bunch of Cronenbergs. You gotta fix this, Rick.
All right, Morty. You know, we are in a pretty deep hole here, but I do have one emergency solution that I can use that'll kind of put everything back to normal, relatively speaking. Here, Morty, put this on while I do a little bit of scouting.
All right, and it is at that point that Rick and Morty take over for a universe where they had died, but had somehow, through some deus ex machina, solved the Cronenberg problem. So, anyway, like I said, I saw that and I was like, oh, fuck, all right, I'm into this show, I guess.
I feel like it's a way to say there's no jumping. There's every episode tries to jump the shark now. Like and now it's impossible too, because anything. I feel like I shouldn't be I want to hear your thoughts about it. Yeah.
It was the whole episode. Like, it was one of those things where I was like, I thought it was going to be dumb. Right. And so then it's so actually so smart. And so that's the thing, is that's what I always wonder, like, I always want to know this, does the writer, creator, are they intending there to be these big, huge symbolic messages, or do we as an audience start applying our own ideas of what we think it is?
I think a little this, a little that. Like, I think that I think that we write from a place of just sort of asking ourselves what things mean to us or don't mean to us, and if we take the reality of everything is dispensable, including the universe we live in, what are the stories we're going to tell if we're a self-hating narcissist who's really into hedonistic pleasures and for some reason has to like go on adventures with a 14-year-old? Like, these are, it's like a fun, like, I think and then it's so fun to watch how dumb it can be, like just then watching that clip of like how they're fighting the way that like you'd fight your parents as a kid. Like, it's so, yeah. I just like the raw emotionality between the two of them.
Yeah, that's exactly. Now, wait, so the one of the creators voices both of those characters?
Mm-hmm. Justin Roiland, he's Rick and Morty.
So does he do that in the writer's room? Is that weird?
It's awesome.
He does that? He speaks like them sometimes?
Yeah, if you pitch something, he'll jump on and sort of riff with you, and it's very cool. But it's really neat. And then, you know, Dan Harmon has a cool, like, his point of view is very erudite, and he enjoys high-roading and explaining, and he has a lot of, like, really intriguing, like, he's, you know, he's a good silk boxer, and so, like, a lot of what he believes or says or finds funny or interesting will sort of become a Rick point of view. I think because it sort of represents, like, well, why make this show, you know? And right. Like, because this is what we like. Here's what's going on.
I think that's interesting. Go ahead, Nicole.
I was just saying, how much of it, like, it's interesting because normally I like serial shows, right, where there's way more of like plot lines that develop and stuff like that. So what I thought was interesting was I assume that these are all totally separate, and once you get the characters, you know, there's not necessarily, you have to watch them in a certain order. But then I thought what was interesting was, like, the very last episode I watched, so it was in season 3, Pickle Rick, they were already divorced.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's continuity. Yeah.
I was like, oh my God, this got even more exciting. They're somehow even taking these emotional character layers. And like, when is the last time I saw a sitcom cartoon where there was a divorce? Is there an episode about the divorce? Do they get divorced in an episode?
Yeah, there's a season. Well, there's a season leading up to the divorce and the season that begins with them living in different apartments he's in his own apartment. And there's a cold open that I really like that is like, Jerry in his sad bachelor pad and just like little moments of his like daily routine and him just going through them, and it's like the bleakest thing I've ever seen.
So, but he's not written off because like in
no, not at all.
Okay. I love Jerry so much. Jerry is I'm big Jerry head. He's a cool guy.
Yeah. It's perfect. That character is so flawless. So then I was like, oh, I hope they didn't like divorce him / kill him off. Which
no, he hangs on, and like his fortunes rise and fall.
Okay,
I mean, they mostly fall, but like he does get a little bit of respect that before he squanders it again.
I think he has like one power that Rick doesn't have that Rick wouldn't value, obviously, and would probably say is a weakness, but it's just the ability to sort of emotionally grow and learn and be vulnerable. Like, Jerry is often humiliated, and he's aware that he is the not the smart partner, not the cool partner, and he's okay with that, and that's part of his being, and that's sort of admirable and beautiful in its own way. He represents something that I think is beyond Rick and Beth. It's just like, but how? What's simple, man?
Yeah, and I think you really need that character in the show, because otherwise, I mean, he gets shit on by everybody. Like he's the ultimate whipping boy on the show. But like, you need to have that vulnerability in the show, because otherwise, it gets too nihilistic. Like, you've got Rick, and then, you know, his daughter is like a little Rick. And then Morty, his arc is just, he becomes more Rick-like throughout the show as he gets, you know, exposed to this like multiverse, and he just learns that nothing really means anything anymore because life is as cheap as Rick says it is. So you need to have someone that is always optimistic no matter how much he gets shit on. I think Jerry is absolutely like the heart of the show. We are going to watch the next clip. And this is from Interdimensional Cable. I threw this in here because it is my favorite clip of the series. it's such a goofy moment, and it is so Interdimensional Cable is, if it wasn't clear, because this is the second installment of this particular trope, Rick, he hacks the cable box so that it picks up cable from all of the dimensions where things just, logic isn't quite logic anymore. So you're watching, you know, TV from some other realm that has different physics going on. So this thing made me laugh so loud, and I think my roommate hated me when this episode came out. So we're going to watch the How They Do It Plumbus segment, which is my favorite 1 minute from this entire series. I don't care if it, how goofy it is. We're going to watch it coming up.
Today on How They Do It, plumbuses.
Everyone has a plumbus in their home. First, they take the Dinglebop and they smooth it out with a bunch of schleem. The schleem is then repurposed for later batches. They take the Dinglebop and they push it through the grumbo where the fleeb is rubbed against it. It's important that the fleeb is rubbed because the fleeb has all of the fleeb juice. Then a schlammy shows up and he rubs it and spits on it. They cut the fleeb. There's several hizzards in the way. The blamps rub against the chumbles, and the plubis and grumbo are shaved away. That leaves you with a regular old plumbus.
I always wondered how plumbuses got made.
All right, this clip comes very close, very, very close to why I generally don't like Adult Swim shows, is because they're just too ironic and they're too conceptual, and like I don't get a tether to this. It's just a bunch of weird stoner stuff going on. But because they did the very specific thing with that How It Got Made show from cable with the cheesy synth music and everything, like I was like, yes. Oh, this is wonderful. Like it's such a fine line for me to like, if you come close to annoying me but you don't, then you get like my undying respect.
Yeah, you go just up to the point of someone's patience and then I mean, I think that's one that shows how talented the art team is. They're so like writing an episode or whatever, like the interdimensional episodes, that's Justin just riffing in the booth, and then they get this raw material and they turn it into like, I mean, it's gorgeous. They're I'm just blown away by them.
Yeah. How much does he get to kind of help conceptualize all the art for it? So is that as kind of, did he just hire the right team and like they just all
he's an artist. Yeah, he's an artist as well. So a lot of the, like, if he's in the room, he can just like draw up what he's thinking of and stuff, which is very cool. But yeah, no, I think a lot of the team have been there since season one. So it's sort of like a cool, all buddies.
Because I always wonder, like, so I used to, before knowing, like, does the voice come first? Does the animation come first? You know, like, how, like, much are the animators involved with the writers? So you don't ever meet the animators, right? But, like, the creators work closer with them.
Yeah, in the before quarantine times, we shared a floor of an office with the animators and artists, like, the whole, and the casting and the... Yeah, the whole show kind of runs out of one floor in Burbank, which is awesome. You get to, and whenever we launch an episode, the writer and the director and the heads of each department will be there going through each page of the script and sort of just conferring about like what the beat of each moment is and what the artists are thinking for it. And like, there's like, this is where I love going to these meetings, because I'll like be like, I don't know, I just wrote there in a room in space, and they're like, yeah, so I'm thinking like Fifth Element, you know, that one scene where, like, and they're so, they've got the best, like,
so they're just coming into it with all those details.
Yeah
Wow. So how fast from when you guys finalize the script and you hand it over to the animators, what's the turnaround on that?
It's very fast. They're really, really good. I think another thing is the scripts aren't quite finalized at really any point until they're out. Like, I think it's a show where we get a lot of leeway from everyone to like go like, oh, hey, we actually rewrote this second act and now it's no longer in space. Now it's in blah, blah, blah. Like I think we're very lucky, because I don't think that that's, I think that it's a, a bit of a privilege to be able to do that because it's expensive for their time and I'm sure frustrating for the artists.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
Hey there. Ever wonder what happens to all those amazing screenplays that never make it to the big screen? Well, wonder no more. Welcome to Table Read Podcast, where we bring those undiscovered gems to life. Picture this, talented actors giving incredible performances with the occasional laugh or blooper thrown in, produced by award-winning pros. From drama to comedy, TV pilots to feature films, there's something for everyone. And guess what? We release new episodes every week, so don't forget to hit that subscribe button. Table Read Podcast, where great stories finally get their chance to shine.
And you said that for this particular episode and the one before it, the other Interdimensional Cable episode, that it's just basically just Justin Roiland riffing? Is that what you said? He just comes up with stuff and then they animate around it?
For the Interdimensional Cable episodes, he and some buddies, because there's only two, but for both of them, he and his friends would get drunk in the booth and just like make each other laugh.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah, there'd be like there'd be like a list of like kind of jumping off points if they'd want it, but it's mostly just like, it's a show called Two Brothers, and you know, like just it's all very Justin's point of view and like. He's pretty inimitable. Like his silliness is contagious and really fun to watch. So yeah, I think that's what those episodes harness.
Well, that's why. And so when you're working with geniuses like that, then how in a writer's room do you feel like given the like space to take and like contribute? Is that super intimidating?
It was at first, but then I think the cool thing is that when, at least for my experience, when you write something that feels personal and weird and like kind of like too close to your own family or like just the way that like, I don't know, I love writing Summer and Beth and love writing Home Beth and Space Beth, like the two different, like, and
yes.
I think the more specific you come to it with the point of view, the more it will, the higher likelihood it'll land, I think, with mm-hmm. everyone. Because I think what Justin and Dan do really well is, you know, like you were saying with like the references to like those 80s like movies and like the archetypes and everything, like mm-hmm, mm-hmm. they're just sort of ways that we can communicate how our own childhoods felt, you know, just like, here's how it felt to be in a house where mom and dad were not that stable and grandpa was my only friend and he was abusive as hell. I don't know, it's a pretty personal thing.
Yeah, the way that they talk to each other with all the like fuck yous, you know, between every, from the children to the grandparents to down to this to everyone, it was like someone wrote my actual life. And I made my daughter, just so you know, I was supposed to be putting her to bed last night, which means like I have to watch, I don't know, funny thing. Actually, she's obsessed with Family Guy. So I was like, hey, if we could just take a second away from Family Guy for 1 second, I appreciate it. But we're going to watch Rick and Morty tonight because I have an assignment. And she's like, I want to watch that. And no joke, they're sitting around like the kitchen table and the mom is, I think it actually was the, or the therapy scene.
Yeah.
So not that I want to jump, but I wrote this down because my daughter made such a great comment. I couldn't believe she said this. And I was like, well, now I have to say this. So I'm the mom in the therapy session says to the therapist, fuck you. And then she turns to the kids and she goes, fuck you too. And this is the episode I'm showing my daughter, right? And she looks at me and she goes, oh my God, that mom sounds exactly like you. From my 12-year-old.
Oh, wow. That is the highest praise a show has ever gotten on this show.
Yes. That makes me so happy.
Because, I mean, I don't know what other families are like, but, like, we're all just yelling fuck you to each other.
Yeah.
Like, all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. We always kind of have in our back pocket the thing to say if the other person says the thing that like this other person doesn't know yet in the family. Like it's the dynamics of like a family and living under one roof and being such different. I gravitate towards that as well.
Well, and I want to know like why did we have to wait for a family to be so normal in cartoon world, right? Like it is so strangely unrealistic and so realistic.
Yeah.
Because of these characters talking to each other like that.
It's interesting that you mentioned Family Guy, Nicole, but that it's, again, this is one of the things that kept me from this show for years, is that I fucking hate Family Guy. And hey, whatever, tastes are subjective, but like, I cannot, that's one of those shows that it's just so nihilistic for nihilism's sake that it really turned me off.
Mm-hmm.
And like I was afraid that Rick and Morty, with its, you know, with its reputation, was going to be like sort of the ultimate like mega version of Family Guy, and like it's not though, because they're because they are so really realistically flawed, and like I don't know, it's watch Anne's episode. The good thing is that Anne wrote the season finale for 4, which is the last season that has come out. So you can work your way up to the episode that she has solo credit on. And, like, ends on such a somber note that it's really emotional. Like, in a way that Family Guy or shows like that could never be, or Simpsons hasn't been able to do in, like, you know, 15 years. And, like, it was really impressive. Like, wow, this is just good storytelling. Like, solid, like, 3-act storytelling and all the stuff that has come before it. And yes, it's, you know, at this point he has 2 versions of his daughter running around that both grow to hate him. And like, it's really absurd on its face, but like you guys really keep the human element in there, which I think for discerning fancy ladies like Nicole and I is a requirement for us to stick with it.
I appreciate that. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I'm dying to see your episode. So now that I'm your super fan, I don't think the show is for bro culture. I think it's for 40-year-old women.
That's how I write my episodes. I write. I wrote one for season 5 and one for season 6. And I like writing from a place of Beth is kind of the best character possible because she deals with all of this shit and she is kind of a Rick. Like you said, it's. I think I understand why bro culture has, you know, historically really boosted the show's visibility. But I think that they're missing a lot of those fans. I think they don't know that Rick is a cautionary tale.
They absolutely don't. So, all right, I did want to circle back on that because we're going to go now to the infamous Szechuan sauce clip, which you wouldn't think is. Which you wouldn't think is infamous. It's such a throwaway moment in the show, but it has defined the show's reputation probably more than anything else. So we're gonna watch Rick talk about Szechuan sauce. from the Rick Shank Redemption. That's the season 3 opener coming up.
Where are we going?
To the day it all began and ended. The moment that changed everything.
Welcome to McDonald's. Can I take your order?
Yeah, I'd like to get a 10-piece McNugget and a bunch of the Szechuan sauce. Like, as much as you're allowed to give me. In 1988, they had this promotion for the Disney film Mulan, where they created a new sauce for the McNuggets called Szechuan sauce. And it's delicious. And then they got rid of it, and now it's gone. This is the only place we're going to be able to try it. It's in my memory.
Rick, you're doing this bit while your brain is melting.
Okay, all right.
Is that
me? I used to wear blue pants. Imagine doing anything you want, then hopping to a timeline where you never did it. Imagine going anywhere, anytime, with nobody able to stop you.
Sounds lonely.
Lonely? Dude, you have yourself. Your infinite selves. It's a non-stop party where all the guests are the only person we like. You think it's cool being the smartest man on Earth, but once we give you this technology, you become the smartest thing in every conceivable universe. The infinite Rick. A god.
Pass.
Excuse me? Bro, Ricks don't pass on this. Who do you think you are?
A different kind of Rick, I guess.
Well, we'll see how long that lasts. Come on, girls! The ice cream's gonna melt! No!
Wow, this sauce is f-ing amazing. You said it was promoting a movie?
Okay, that was the initial Szechuan sauce scene. And then what we don't see is that Rick is actually playing a trick on the aliens that are trying to get the secret to interdimensional travel out of his mind. And he says that, you know, he invented this scene to basically pass them a computer virus. This gets very complicated. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, that's really not why he invented travel. And then you find out at the end of the episode he really did invent interdimensional travel just so he could get Szechuan sauce. at least according to the logic of that particular episode. Then he turns really dark and like foreboding.
Yeah.
Like his whole raison d'etre is just to like get Szechuan sauce from McDonald's.
Yeah.
And then like weirdly, the dudes on the internet just really gravitated toward this.
Mm-hmm.
And they started demanding that McDonald's reissue Szechuan sauce.
Oh, really? And did
Yeah. And they did for like a very short period of time. And then they sold out and then they got angrier.
And there were like videos of like teenagers like jumping on McDonald's counters going, I want my Szechuan sauce. And like, you know, in the context of their, you know, privileged lives, they're thinking this is hilarious.
Yeah, right. Yeah. It was. It's ironic, but it still happened. Yeah.
Exactly. It's not. That's not cool. Nobody wants that from no. No one who works on the show wants that response.
Right. Right.
But that's sort of the risky run.
Yeah, and like I don't want to put you on the spot with this. I've read the creators. You know, word on this. They're like, yeah, guys, don't do that. But like what you'd mentioned, Anne, was that those guys, those kids, those little dudes, they don't understand that Rick's a cautionary tale. It seems pretty obvious that he is. There's not really like any like masking going on. Rick is definitely not someone you want to emulate. It's someone that I identify with as a relatively smart person in a stupid country. It's hard not to identify with Rick when you see everyone being a fucking idiot all around you. And like, but what it says to me is how lonely that experience is. Like how lonely it is to be smarter than most everybody around you.
Yeah.
And that's the cautionary tale. I don't understand how they got "I want to riot over Szechuan sauce" out of that, but you know, they're teenagers, they're dumb, and that's what teenagers do.
Yeah.
And that's what's interesting about me feeling like it's written for the 40-year-old woman, right? And these teenagers relating to it and seeing a totally different side to it, right? Because when I watched that clip, and I watched it the full episode last night, I was like, oh, when he turns around and says that first comment of like, yeah, I used to wear blue pants. Like, that level of throwaway genius comedy is also my favorite part of the show, right? Like, and clearly the punchline at the end, that the aliens, you know, going, I love the Szechuan sauce. But that's exactly what it is. It's a misdirect. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
So that you look at that and you wouldn't say blue pants. You wouldn't look at that and say Szechuan sauce, right? Like, so the right. other time that they did that, that it stood out to me was in the, with the guns and he, maybe it was the, one I was talking about with the people in the extra planet, or maybe it's in Pickle Rick, where at the very end there's like a duel and he's like, don't shoot, and like Morty comes in, there's like mm-hmm. there's a shooting standoff between Rick and an alien.
Yeah that's from that episode
from the same one
that yes
her, okay, and he's yes. holding her hostage, the daughter, and he's like trying to figure out how to, you know, not shoot his granddaughter. And involving Morty, and at the very end, it's like he picks up the thing that says, you know, read this, and therefore, like, there was instructions on it, right?
Yeah.
And the throwaway line is like, oh, good thing I read the note, but, like, clearly yeah. he didn't. Like, those, that's what's the layers of this show with the comedy, right? Like, I don't know, are the teenagers enjoying that part of the comedy as much as we are? I have no idea. Now we need to invite a teenager who has jumped on yes. cars.
Yeah.
That's one shot. And ask, are you getting the genius minutiae of all
yeah.
of this?
Yeah, that's just what I need to edit someone farting into a microphone. Yeah, that's
but yeah, what you're hitting on is exactly like that is that the undercuts are super fun. Like the going like, do you want to care? Because we told you that I love the artist Lorde and her album Melodrama, and like she has uh-huh. that lyric of like, we told you this was melodrama. Like, I'm just like, it feels yeah. like, hey, we told you nothing mattered, come watch TV. So why do you give a shit what happened to Rick's actual daughter? Why do you care who Arbeth's actual father is? Or, you know, like all that kind of stuff. I'm just like, ha, you caring. Which I think yeah. is sort of a teenage boy way to come about life. So I get why that's I think probably some knee-jerk thing is like, oh man, this is cringe. You just had a emotion? That's cringe, dude. Like,
yeah.
Well, and is it this episode where they have to bury themselves, their dead bodies?
That's, I think, the first interdimensional. No, it's not. No, that is the episode. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So, Rick,
no, that's from the first portion of the first season. That's from Love Potion. But then they also pay that off by returning to that dimension where they had ejected themselves from. So those two episodes are basically two-parters.
See, geniusness. But the sadness that his own, the little Morty felt when he was watching his own dead body have to get buried. Even the way that the artist drew the dead body.
Yeah.
And by the way that they mixed the sound, I don't even know. I should have been paying attention to what the music was. I was like feeling it, right?
Yeah.
Like that's exactly right. You're getting me into these moments where I'm thinking like, wow, like this is heavy and this is saying mm-hmm. something. So,
because if it was just Rick, it would be like probably one of those Adult Swim cartoons where it's like, yeah, I don't know what my tether would be. Like I do like
right.
Rick. I love him as a character. I care about him, which is my fault. Yeah, that's what Morty is going, oh, man.
Yeah, yeah, Morty is... Morty functions as, like, as the audience surrogate, but then he also gets compromised yeah. throughout the show and becomes more Rick-like. It's interesting that they have arcs. it's cool stuff. All right, we're going to play one more clip. This is from Pickle Rick. This is such a good episode of television. You guys deserve this Emmy. This is so good.
And, is incredible.
Yeah. And I love the fact that we were already talking about therapy, because here's where Rick shows up.
Ever.
This is where Rick finally shows up as a pickle and has to admit that he was lying about his whole pickleness. Which it's such a dumb metaphor, but it works really well.
Oh, so perfect. So perfect.
So we're going to watch one more clip. This is from Pickle Rick coming up.
You must be Rick.
Mm-hmm.
I've heard a lot about you today. Your family is crazy about you. Your daughter holds you in very high regard. You're a lucky fella.
Yeah, thank you. Sweetie, you don't still happen to have that syringe in your purse?
Dad, I would like you to tell me what's in the syringe.
It's a serum that I need to stay alive. I have had a rough day, and I've sustained a lot of damage. I'm pretty close to death, which the serum will prevent.
By changing you from a pickle to a human.
Yes.
Rick, why did you lie to your daughter?
So I wouldn't have to come here.
Why didn't you want to come here?
Because I don't respect therapy. Because I'm a scientist. Because I invent, transform, create, and destroy for a living. And when I don't like something about the world, I change it. And I don't think going to a rented office in a strip mall to listen to some agent of averageness explain which words mean which feelings has ever helped anyone do anything. I think it's helped a lot of people get comfortable and stop panicking, which is a state of mind we value in the animals we eat, but not something I want for myself. I'm not a cow. I'm a pickle when I feel like it. So... you asked.
Rick, the only connection between your unquestionable intelligence and the sickness destroying your family is that everyone in your family, you included, use intelligence to justify sickness. You seem to alternate between viewing your own mind as an unstoppable force and as an inescapable curse. And I think it's because the only truly unapproachable concept for you is that it's your mind within your control. You chose to come here, you chose to talk, to belittle my vocation, just as you chose to become a pickle. You are the master of your universe, and yet you are dripping with rat blood and feces, your enormous mind literally vegetating by your own hand. I have no doubt that you would be bored senseless by therapy, the same way I'm bored when I brush my teeth and wipe my ass. Because the thing about repairing, maintaining, and cleaning is, it's not an adventure. There's no way to do it so wrong you might die. It's just work. And the bottom line is, some people are okay going to work, and some people would rather die. Each of us gets to choose. That's our time. I'm going to give you guys my card and hope to hear from you again. And if you have any friends or family that eat poop and would like to stop, give them my number.
Yeah, dude. That's therapy. That's the best therapy scene I've seen in a long time.
yeah, absolutely. I saw that and it reminded me of my mom's relationship with her father, who is a scientist, and he was like very name droppy and hung out with Feynman, not to brag, but was like a toxicologist in Pasadena who like did all this cool shit and like had a very cool life, but completely, you know, neglected his family and like left his wife when she had like five kids in the, you know, 60s to live with his secretary, and like just things like that where it's like, ooh, grandpa, ooh. And then I saw like him grow old and be like a version of himself that didn't have the control and the faculties that he once used to stay away from family and to stay away from being the person that needs anything. And that was rough to see. Because it, you know, so that's what that episode made me think of.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. No, and like, and that, what I think is so great about this episode is that you can have that very real reaction. And then I take from the episode that, again, I, you know, my identification with Rick as a reasonably educated person in America, it feels lonely and like, and it's easy to get angry. And that's what I take from Rick. And then, on the other hand, there's the kids that are like, fuck you, I'm Pickle Rick, on like their Insta stories, because that's what they take from it. And that's fine. You know, hey, whatever.
Right.
It can be a lot of things to a lot of people. Fuck you, I'm Pickle Rick can totally be a catchphrase.
Right.
We're fine with that.
Well, and the genius, so who penned this episode? Was it
Jessica Gao? She's incredible. She's, I think she's running She-Hulk right now.
Wow. Because I mean, I know that everyone collaborates in the writer's room, so, you know, but the vulnerability of that, especially that scene, Gina, that was such a perfect, you know, placement of it, is that you've got this character, this bigger than everybody character who has been so stripped down, right, to having to use rat bones and feces and all these, you know, the blood and the guts, like he's dying and he's sitting and he finally comes to join in the family at his most weakest moment. And I do love how they get him into these weak moments. So it keeps the complexity for the character. And then he's meets his match when he says, you know, he, who was it? well, either when we were just listening, the average therapist that she's, you know, like the average vocational, whatever. Mm-hmm. And he completely dismisses her. And then she outsmarts him in a way. Like, there's not many people who can kind of put him in his place.
Yeah, he's the ultimate high road king. Yeah,
right.
Like, he can justify and contextualize. He's very manipulative, and he can put things into a perspective, no matter who he's talking to, that makes his point ultimately right. And so, yeah, it's so cool.
Yeah.
To see
that. And I'm buying into it, going, I agree. This is why I kind of can't stand therapy, too, mm-hmm. even though I'm in it all the time.
Yeah,
I'm,
no, same. And,
right.
I have therapy, but yeah.
Yeah. And then she responds so geniusly and puts him in this place. And at the very end, goes, time's up. Like, that's the geniusness of the show, right? Which is also why I always wondered years and years and years ago when I was trying to figure out what's the difference between a half an hour drama and a soap opera, right? And the soap opera doesn't say up, time's up, right? Like, they continue the scene. And that's why it's like so overdramatic. But
yeah.
Good drama and good comedy does exactly the, like, we know when to cut, we know when to stop, we made our point, and then we're going to make a joke and get the fuck out of here.
Right.
And it's just, it's so perfectly timed. That's mm-hmm. that's what's great. Yeah.
I'll take the credit. This is before I wrote for the show. And but yeah, oh my God, I did such a good job. But yeah, no, that's what I love about it too, is the undercuts. Like,
yes.
Yeah.
But also Anne's episode, season 4, episode 10 has a lot of the same. In fact, this character comes back, does she not? In that episode, that the therapist, she comes back briefly.
Yeah, yeah. Dr. Wong makes another appearance.
Yes. Yes. So
yeah, I love her. I love Dr.
Wong. All right. This has been really fucking great. We're all a bunch of neckbeards living on Rick. And that's okay. Nicole Blaine.
Yes.
We're gonna wrap it up. Tell us, has Rick and Morty experience of it, has it told you anything that you didn't already know about the world of men, the world of bros? Obviously, we took things that, like, didn't have anything to do with men, which I think is great. Like, I'm not so rigid in the concept of this show that we can't just be like, oh, this is a show about women, and this is a show about, you know, therapy, and it's a show about, you know, families in crisis. And, like, it is all of those things, so why not take that from it? And
yeah, I didn't see there was any other way to take it. I cannot believe this is such a bro phenomenon. I'm serious. I think this should be for middle-aged women housewives. This would be my show.
I think it, at its heart, is. Yeah.
I agree. This is for people with complicated lives. And
mm-hmm. yeah.
That could be anybody, really. That could be anybody with dysfunctional families, any of that. Any final words, any final thoughts on Rick and Morty? You're a writer, obviously. You have a lot of of input on it. But, you know, just now that we have, you know, three women from very different perspectives and not a dude in sight.
I love it. My thoughts on Rick and Morty... Yeah, I mean, I don't have anything like new or profound that we haven't really touched on. I feel like really happy and lucky to write for a show that, like, you know, you kind of have to go to work and go, here's something personal about me, just by nature of what the show is deconstructing human relationships and human emotions and stuff, but through like the dumbest ways we can. And I don't know, it's a privilege and an honor to work for that. And I appreciate you having me and for talking. And also, I totally get if there are like, yeah, I feel like I've been like so like effusively Rick and Morty this whole time, but like I also understand, like, some of my friends are like, I don't like the burping. I'm like, also like,
yeah,
there's certain episodes that, you know, there's more and less problematic moments every here and there, but.
I did curate the episodes around my own personal taste. So, yeah, I picked like my 4 favorite episodes from the first 3 seasons. So there are episodes where I like less. Mm-hmm. I can't say that, you know, it hits the heights every time, but like they're all enjoyable. There wasn't one that I didn't like.
Yeah,
so, and I think Nicole will probably feel the same way.
I'm excited that I now get to cuddle with my daughter and get to watch Rick and Morty. Like, I feel like you've changed my life. So, because I'm done with Family Guy. I've been there, I've done that. And so I'm very excited that we can. And that's what's fun. A 12-year-old. I know, I'm not letting my 9-year-old watch it. I'm not letting him do that. But the 12-year-old, it's great.
Like, that's perfect,
It's bonding parenthood time, and I can enjoy it as much as her, right? Like, that's what's nice when you have the kids aged up and finally, like, I can show you Waiting for Guffman, you know what I mean?
Yes, absolutely.
It's so great. So I'm excited that I get to share another thing with, like, the next generation. So
that's very cool.
Make more for me, please.
She can watch her mom in cartoon form.
That's me.
Oh, that makes me happy.
All right, Nicole Blaine, let everyone listening know where they can find you, where they all can find you on the internet.
Yeah, if you need any more, like, horrible mom stories, I just released a special. It's called Life's a Bit. You can get it through my website at NicoleBlaine.com, or you can find it on Amazon. If you search on Amazon, Life's a Bit, or my name, Nicole Blaine, or iTunes. But I have a whole special that you can watch. And I have my own children playing themselves in the special. So,
nice.
Yeah. What's really nice is I make them actually act out the parts that gave me all the ideas for jokes about them. So I make fun of them, and then I make them get in on it. That's where you can.
That is so cool. That is wonderful. All right, and Lane, same thing. Let everyone know where they can find you on the internet and otherwise.
I'm a little bit on Twitter at Annie L. Lane, and sometimes on Instagram. I've been kind of stopping. Donate to Black Lives Matter is what I'll plug.
Absolutely.
I really have, like, very little to be like, hey, check out my, but not, I feel like now I'm, like, seeming judgmental of.
Not at all.
I'm just in a place where I'm like, I don't know if I'm funny online anymore. don't need to go out of your way, but if you'd like, that's fine.
Or you can watch Rick and Morty. Hey.
Yeah.
It's everywhere. So it's really easy to find. And you can find me, Gina Bloom, at Gina Bloom, JeeNablOom. That's on all social media. And this is the last episode of the second season of Sweet Lady's Guide to Bro Culture. We will be back in November after the election. We may be doing it from California, maybe doing it from Canada. We'll see what happens. That is not a joke. By the way, I have my escape plan already ready to go. So if you find me at a Tim Hortons in Vancouver this fall, then that will tell you that we are truly in the darkest timeline. To reference another Dan Harmon show. Thank you, you guys. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me. This is a delight.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. I loved it.
Yeah.
And thank you to everyone listening to the second season. Like I said, we'll be back in a few months, and we'll all be probably still locked indoors. Everybody have a great summer, and fuck you, I'm Pickle Rick.